Gar and I, as you know, as we sit here together and talk about this, we understand accountability, and we are accountable for what this team did this year. We don't run away from it. We accept it. That's on us.
Locked On Bulls, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, a show for the most passionate fan base in the NBA. Your number one source for Chicago Bulls news and stories.
For me to be here in the NBA organization, such a historic organization, the Chicago Bulls, so it's just a dream come true for me.
Live on Dash Radio every Tuesday, Thursday, and Saturday.
This is going to be a process. You'll snap your fingers and it all happens at once, but that's the plan moving forward.
So kick back, relax, and get ready for the best hour of your day. Locked On Bulls starts now. Here are your hosts, Jordan Malley and Matt Peck.
What's up and welcome into Locked On Bulls, part of the Locked On Podcast Network. I'm Jordan Malley along with my friend Matt Peck. We are live on Dash Radio, dashradio.com, and the Dash Radio app on the Nothing But Net channel. We're live on Dash Radio every Tuesday, Thursday, and Saturday, 10 a.m. Eastern, 9 a.m. Central Time. Follow us on Twitter at Jordan C. Malley, at Locked On Bulls, at Bulls underscore Peck. Like us on Facebook, facebook.com/LockedOnShyBulls. Subscribe to the show. Anywhere you find podcasts, you'll find us. That means iTunes, Android, Stitcher, Google Play, and literally anywhere else you find podcasts, you'll find us. Thanks for tuning in tonight. I know that we dropped our episode a little late yesterday, but hopefully if you didn't get a chance to listen to that, you can go back and listen to that. We recapped the Cavs game. We jumped into a little bit of a conversation with Zach LaVine, and we also did Turn Back the Bulls, which is our new segment on Tuesdays where we take a look at Bulls history in the week that we're recording. So a lot of cool things for you over there, and as well as on at Locked On Bulls on Twitter. And also to mention too that we now have a site live and running paired with our friends at FanRag Sports. So it's LockedOnBulls.com for all Bulls content. We've got plenty of written content that we just debuted this week and also our podcast is up there too. So if you don't necessarily like subscribing anywhere or you don't like using any of these podcast apps, you can find it straight on the website. So if you like listening straight on a website, it's right there for you in an easy player on the main page. So that's LockedOnBulls.com as well as on FanRag Sports, part of the FanRag Sports Network. So today we're going to, obviously if you're listening to this right now, the Bulls are going to take on the Pacers. It's kind of a matinee for tonight's lineup of NBA games. So we're not going to break down or preview the Pacers-Bulls game, but we will give you a recap tomorrow on tomorrow's episode. Today, we wanted to sort of spend most of our time answering your questions, the ones that you did send in. We thank you for everybody who did. But first and foremost, what's going on, Matt?
Not much, Jordan. I don't know about you. I'm super excited to see the return of Nico Mirotić, which will not be happening in this Pacers-Bulls game Wednesday night. But it sounds like, from what Hoiberg said at practice on Tuesday and then again shoot around Wednesday, we're going to see Nico on Friday on the court in a Bulls jersey, most likely playing alongside Bobby Portis as a part of that second unit. And I know that I've spewed a lot of Nico Mirotić hate out there on this podcast, on our old Debatable show. I mean, I'm excited just by sheer morbid curiosity. I am excited to see what happens when Nico comes back. I really hope it's not a huge dud and a letdown. It's just like, all right, well, there's no fights. There's nothing. I want some kind of drama. I want some kind of awkward looks or glances, or maybe Bobby Portis hits the deck and Nico's there, but he doesn't give him a hand to lift him up. I want something. I'm excited to see Nico and Bobby share the court together.
If you think back before the fight happened and like him coming into training camp, the way he looked, it looked like he had been working out all summer, and it seemed like he added a ton of muscle. He looked like he was in the best shape that he has been since he's been a Bull. So that was kind of what people were excited about seeing. This is also a really crucial year, and had Bobby Portis not punched him in the face and knocked him out for seven weeks of the NBA season, this would have been a crucial start for Nico Mirotić in terms of his career and also where he stands with the Bulls. I'm excited too to see how he plays in a rebuilding system. This is going to be the first time we get a look at him in terms of numbers and see how he plays with this kind of new mold for the Bulls in terms of the style that they're playing, and also too playing on a team that for the most part is tanking, losing, one of the worst teams in the league. And so it'll be interesting to see how he incorporates his game and how that helps the Bulls. I'm not setting my expectations super high, and I don't think you are either, but it definitely will give you at least something to watch for the first couple weeks here leading up to the holidays.
Yeah, I wouldn't expect to see too many minutes for Nico on Friday, assuming he does play, because just based on the way Hoiberg talked about it, he kind of said, you know, hopefully we'll be able to give Nico some run on Friday, some action, I think is the phrase he used. So I'm thinking they're going to ease him back into action. You have to assume, and I'm pretty sure Nico has said it himself, the conditioning is still a factor here because he was really inactive for a while there while he was healing his broken face. But yeah, as far as what we want to see from Nico and the fact that it's a big year for him because the Bulls have that team option for him next season, It is curious because we're going to see maybe a different kind of Nico than we've seen before through his first 3 years in Chicago because, as you mentioned, this is a rebuilding team now. There really isn't a go-to scorer on this team. They're trying to find success with Chris Dunn starting at point guard, facilitating the offense for guys like Markkanen, finding shots for him, for Holiday, maybe Robin Lopez occasionally. But, I mean, Nico doesn't have to worry about trying to find his shots, trying to find spaces on the floor where he can be effective and contribute offensively behind the ISO possessions of Jimmy Butler, or behind the ISO possessions of Dwayne Wade, or behind the possessions of Derrick Rose. This is going to be a completely new look for Nico Mirotić as far as how he fits into the offense. And I'm curious. I'm really curious to see what we're going to see from him. But again, I would be surprised to see him play more than 15 to 20 minutes on Friday.
Yeah, and he might not have to fight Jimmy Butler in ISO, but he's going to have to concern himself with Jerian Grant dribbling the ball and trying to score in ISO with that second unit. And so he might have a little bit of a problem there.
Nico's just going to be standing behind the three-point line somewhere while Jerian Grant dribbles for 20 seconds and then chucks up a three.
So with that, I think that's going to be interesting too. And I dove into it a little bit deeper on LockedOnBulls.com, kind of breaking down a few different scenarios that I think are likely in this month until Nico's trade eligibility comes up in January 15th date. I broke down kind of a scenario, the most possible scenarios that could happen. And obviously there's a lot that could happen over a course of a month, but it is quite interesting to talk about. And also, too, I think for the most part, if you're a Bulls fan, if you don't ignore what happened over these 7 weeks and you keep the mindset that, okay, even if Nico does play well, that the Bulls front office mindset should be, okay, the reason that we put him back on the court with Bobby Portis in that locker room is to see what we could get on the floor. And hopefully he plays a little bit better than he has and his value increases a little bit, so we do get to that January 15th deadline and Garpax can get something rather than at this point right now what we've seen. If we're talking about exactly today, the value for him is little to none, and that's the same thing with Bobby Portis. The value around the league for both of those guys is little to none. So I think over this course of this month we're actually going to get to see maybe just maybe if things can fall the Bulls' way just for once, that maybe Nico plays well and there are some teams interested in him.
I'm definitely curious to see how this pans out. Before we move on to our mailbag segment of the show, just curious, Jordan, I got a question for you. What do you think, if you had to take more points scored by Nico or more interactions between Nico and Bobby, and when I say interactions, it could be, you know, a high five, a butt tap, a fist bump, any kind of positive we are teammates on the floor together interactions, are you taking more points scored by Nico or more interactions with Bobby?
I'm going with more points from Nico.
Yeah, that's what I thought.
I think the ratio would be a little bit more interesting if we were talking about, like, in terms of buckets that he would make in a game. I don't know what the interaction is going to be between those two. And I think, too, if we think about it, how are the teammates going to react? And how is this going to play out for everybody else on the roster who also, you got to think about, probably feels really uncomfortable, too. And especially once he gets back in that locker room, they're dressing up, you know, they're suiting up, getting ready to play games, and they're actually, you know, they're going to have to deal with this as a team in that locker room. So I'm interested how that dynamic is going to work, too, and whether or not they do exactly what they're saying that they're going to do, and they're going to focus on basketball, and that's going to be their main priority when they're on the floor and ignore all this other stuff that's off the court. And if they can do that, which I'm still not buying in the factor that they can do that, and that's going to be effective for a tanking team that, you know, players are going to get down on themselves for losing games and how badly the Bulls are right now, I feel like that combined with everything, the history between Bobby and Nico, I just don't think, still think that the situation is very, is ideal or even really makes sense for the Bulls.
No, it's awkward for everyone involved. And to me, it's very easy to see their teammates kind of tiptoeing around them and trying too hard to not, you know, rub either player the wrong way or give the perception that they're picking sides, because still we have not heard any reports of any legitimate conversation between the two. They're on the practice floor together. As of Friday, it sounds like they're going to share a court together in an actual NBA game. But if they still aren't communicating on the minimal basis of, hey, we're teammates, we got to play together, it's awkward for everybody.
So with that, let's jump into questions from the listeners. So our mailbag segment here. Every Wednesday, we're going to do this. So if you have questions, concerns, comments, things that you just want to talk about or you want to hear, have us talk about and kind of discuss, send them over to us on Twitter at Locked On Bulls, or send us an email. You can send us an email at LockedOnBulls@gmail.com. We respond to everybody, and we like hearing the feedback, and we also like hearing your questions, because it is, you know, this podcast is for the listeners too, and we want to get your opinion in there, and we also want to talk about the relevant topics that you want to hear. So kick us off with the first question, Matt.
All right, first question comes from Aaron on Twitter. Which draft prospects match the best with our current pieces of the future? Aaron says, personally, I'm all in on the Bagley train, but what about Mo Bamba or DeAndre Ayton? Another name that Aaron does not mention, of course, is the international teenage sensation, Luka Doncic. So, Jordan, your thoughts on that?
I think if the Bulls get the number one pick, and if we're specifically talking about right now, what we've seen from Bagley over the course of a month in college basketball, everything that you read, everything that you see, obviously it's kind of a no-brainer if the Bulls are there. The Bulls need everything. Let's be honest. The Bulls need everything. So if you're picking number one, I think right now, if the draft was today, you're taking Bagley at number one. And that's if the Bulls still get the number one pick, which, you know, I still have this slight feeling that once LaVine comes back, and I hope I'm wrong, but somehow the Bulls will mess this up and not get the number one pick. And it's not even guaranteed if the Bulls are the worst team in the league that they get the number one pick. So if you do have the number one pick, I'm taking Bagley. I think it gets more interesting when you get to picks 2 through 4, and that's where it's going to be really interesting to see what the Bulls do in terms of players. I personally said it before, I think DeAndre Ayton, pairing him with Lauri Markkanen would be awesome, but the one thing that he's been exposed early is that he doesn't play a whole lot of defense. He doesn't know how to protect the rim that well, so that's going to be a learning curve that him coming into the NBA is going to have to learn. And with the Bulls defensively, like, you see some of the young guys aren't necessarily defensively sound, and Fred Hoiberg isn't known as a defensive coach. So those are some current concerns there. What I saw from Mo Bamba last night too, I don't know if you saw his monstrous dunk that it looked like he reached over the backboard to slam it in.
I did see that. Whew. That was insane.
Anytime you get a guy that big and that long, and with that length, that athleticism, I mean, it's hard to overlook. So I think no matter where the Bulls pick between 1 or 4, between 1 and 3, I think you're going to get a player that's going to ultimately help. And it really, the Bulls need everything. So we're not really in a situation where we need to take a specific position or a specific type of player, because really the Bulls need everything. The saddest part is the Bulls need a point guard. They need an athletic point guard. They need more athletic guards in general. And with this class in particular, the guards are weak. So you got to kind of look at a bigger guy, or you got to look at somebody like Marvin Bagley.
I think I'm with you for the most part. It would be great if this was a deep draft class for point guards at the top, where the Bulls will ideally be selecting, but it's not. We've mentioned that before. Really, like, the best point guard in this draft projects to be Colin Sexton from Bama, the freshman, but I mean, he's like barely scraping the top 10 of mock drafts right now. And, you know, I mentioned a name that Aaron left out in his question, which is Luka Doncic, who is, you know, putting together insane highlight reels from his play overseas right now. He's averaging 25 points, 9 boards, 7 assists per 40 minutes with a 62% true shooting percentage. Those are crazy good numbers. But and he's also, I mean, he's versatile. I think he could play both guard positions and the wing in the NBA. But I'm worried about his NBA ceiling. Like, some of the stuff I'm seeing him do over there is incredible, but I wonder if it just looks really good because he's doing it against a weaker level of competition. And as much as people talk about, like, oh, that, you know, the NBA is turning into a, you know, a point guard driven league, and it's Steph and it's Westbrook and it's it's Chris Paul, it's these guys. To me, you can't pass up on an athletic, versatile big, especially for the way that modern NBA teams like to play their guys at the five and the four positions. And pairing Bagley with Markkanen in the Bulls front court, to me, is just, it's too good to pass up. Assuming the Bulls have the pick of the litter, I would take Marvin Bagley. You mentioned DeAndre Ayton. The defense is kind of a worry. I've also heard that with DeAndre Ayton, there's a work ethic question involved. And then offensively, I think Mo Bamba's a little bit limited. He projects to be a great rim protector in the NBA, but his offensive game is not nearly as developed right now as Bagley. I think between those three bigs that people are talking about going in the top five, Marvin Bagley has the whole package, and he's who I would take.
Yeah, and then obviously this would be a different conversation too if Michael Porter Jr. didn't have the injuries, the back injuries. That's kind of a concern too.
I mean, I just don't know how you draft him without seeing him play any college
Absolutely.
Ball. Absolutely, like his entire one and done year is just wiped out.
And with guys you've seen, like guys have come into the draft that have been injured. Like I look at a case like the guy like OG Anunoby from Indiana. He played a season and a half before he had his ACL injury. So it was kind of understandable. You knew what you were kind of getting in that type of player. But like you said, when you haven't seen him play any games at a collegiate level, you know, at sort of that high level, it's hard to kind of figure out what you can do with him. And it's always the worry too. The injuries are a big worry. And you look at guys that have been taken that have had injuries in the past and serious injuries in the past, some of them haven't really worked out. So especially over the course of the last 5 years. So that's kind of a concern. I'm sure his name will still be in the mix when we're talking about this in March, April, and May. But right now, if the Bulls got the number one pick, I think it's kind of brainless at this point to not take Marvin. Like if you're not going to take Marvin Bagley at number one, I would love to hear the reasoning from the Bulls front office if they did, in fact, do that in the summer.
All right, moving along to our next question here. This is from Popzar on Twitter. What possible additions to the 2018 roster could you envision outside of the draft? Trade pieces are questionable, tons of cap room, limited free agent pool. So we just talked about who we'd love to see the Bulls add in that near the top of the 2018 draft class. What about other pieces, whether it be via trades or free agent signings at the deadline or into the 2018 offseason, Jordan?
I think from the free agent market, I know that the Bulls have this flexibility that they've talked about, but I feel like 2018 is not going to be the year where the Bulls go out and spend a whole lot in free agency. I think you got to be smart with not only your draft pick, but then the pieces that you do add in free agency. So I would hope that the Bulls don't sign anybody that's older than 25 next year in free agency if they're going to offer up a lot of money. And really, the Bulls are going to have a ton of money, so they're going to really get their pick of guys who they want. And there's a lot of guys that are restricted free agents. It's just going to be depending on how much money the Bulls want to throw at some of these guys. Like, I'm looking at some of these names, like smart pieces to add that I think you could get value from and you could get it on a pretty decent contract compared to some of the others. Like, you throw out names, like I'm thinking like Jabari Parker, and he's a restricted free agent. How much money do you want to throw at a guy that has that many injuries? You've got
That many injuries at only 22? No, thank you.
You've got Aaron Gordon out there who's also a restricted free agent, and I would assume that Orlando would match whatever else is out there. So a lot of these guys are restricted free agents where the Bulls could throw a ton of cash at them, but it just depends on kind of whether the teams match it or not. You've got guys like, I don't know, like Jahlil Okafor, who's an unrestricted free agent.
No.
You've got a guy like Marcus Smart, who's a restricted free agent. You got Julius Randle, who's restricted free agent. Some of these other pieces, like younger pieces, I want the Bulls to try and get savvy deals in terms of adding to this, because realistically, next year, they're not going to compete. We're looking at 2-3 years to the point where you start thinking about adding that superstar level talent with those max contracts. So if we're talking about free agents, I think you got to look at the talent pool that's available under 25. And if you're going to throw money out there this summer, you throw it at young pieces that you can develop and keep around for a long time. Pieces that you envision that are going to be a part of this rebuild, a part of ultimately a championship team.
Absolutely. I mean, I think unfortunately for Popzar, who sent us this question, you're thinking a little too far ahead. Because as Jordan noted, I don't see the Bulls spending money on a big name free agent of any kind in 2018, not just going after the big names, because obviously they're not going to come here. I think it's going to be at least two more years until this Bulls core is good enough to at least maybe entice a big name free agent to at least, at the very least, sit down to a meeting to hear a pitch. We're still 2 years away from that happening. If you're talking about the top tier free agents in the league, even the mid tier guys, it just seems counterproductive. I mean, if you think about what this Bulls team could really use next year, maybe a young veteran or a mid-tier veteran wing, like a 3-and-D wing, because you think, all right, hopefully Dunn earns himself to keep that starting point guard job. You got LaVine at the shooting guard, Markkanen at the four, and then one of those top three draft picks, you're starting them at center, whether it's Bagley or Ayton or Bamba, whoever. So really what you would love to have is a veteran who can play defense and shoot threes. But you look at the free agent market at that position. I mean, Trevor Ariza, age 32. Doug McDermott, been there, done that. Jeff Green, age 31. Richard Jefferson, age 37. Michael Beasley, age 28. Omri Caspi, age 29. Luke Babbitt, age 28. Like, do you want to give any of those guys money? I don't see the point there. So I think what's most logical for the Bulls, let's not talk about who they're going to offer money to in the summer of 2018. Let's talk about who they will offer money to in the sense of taking on a bad contract before the 2017-18 season is over. Because right now, the Bulls still have about, $15 million in cap space that they could spend. They need to spend like three more to get to the cap floor. So they keep talking about that cap flexibility, being able to take on bad contracts to get some draft picks for this rebuild, because they've been sending second round draft picks away like free candy. How about you do that before you worry about who you're signing in the summer of 2018? Take on a bad contract and get a draft pick with it. That, to me, should be a bigger concern for fans, especially as we get closer to that February trade deadline.
I think one other thing to note too here is it's going to depend on who the Bulls take in the draft too, because like you were talked about, you brought up a good point. It's like positional basketball. So if the Bulls find themselves not picking at number one or not picking at number two, and say for argument's sake that Bagley and Doncic are off the board and you're picking between three and four, you're going to take a center. So then there's a lot of quality centers under 25 out there that the Bulls could throw legitimate money at, and I see that could fit. I'm thinking like guys like, I don't know, like Yusuf Nurkic or Clint Capella, and like, it's not saying that those guys would leave their situations to come to the Bulls, but in terms of like who the Bulls legitimately could offer big money to see whether or not they would come here, those are pieces that you could look at, but it depends on a lot on who they draft. It also depends on, too, remember the fact, factor in, too, the money that they're going to have to spend on Zach LaVine, too. That's going to make a lot of difference, too. So yeah. There's a lot of moving parts, and it's kind of hard to talk about early free agency. But some of those names that we listed out there, a lot of them are restricted free agents. And if the Bulls could pluck one or two of those guys on decent deals, I think you call it a win. If you can pluck any of those guys away from some of these teams and add them to your core, I think it makes sense. But if you're looking for the Bulls to sign some superstar in 2018, that's just not going to happen. I think you're going to have to wait closer to 2019, 2020 before you see the Bulls try to reel in a big fish.
Absolutely. All right. And moving on to our final question of this edition of Locked On Bulls mailbag, Ryan asks, what would it take for Garpax to be fired? Heard that one before, right, Jordan?
All right, so I thought about this a lot, and I think what we came to an agreement on early before the season started, somewhere between August and September, maybe we were still even on the debatables, we said that in terms of Garpax getting fired, they're two separate entities in terms of what the Bulls front office thinks of them. And if you want one of them to get rid of, I think Gar Foreman's the first one out. And so in order to do that, I think you don't draft in the top three. You make moves, you trade guys away, you let Zach LaVine walk. There's a combination of all these different things that get them fired, but let's be honest. I mean, Jerry's been pretty loyal to both of these guys, and he seems to think that him and Michael seem to think that Gar Foreman and John Paxson are the ones to build, to rebuild this Bulls roster. So I think I honestly couldn't tell you, I couldn't pinpoint one move that the Bulls would make that would ultimately say, all right, that's the straw that broke the camel's back, whatever, in order to get rid of one of them. But if you're looking in terms of like how these two would get broken up, I think if you had to look at one or the other, you're looking at Gar Foreman to be the first one axed.
Absolutely. Yeah, I couldn't agree more. And to your first point of Bulls fans tend to lump the two together, and hashtag fire Gar Pax has been the biggest trending hashtag among Chicago sports fans for 2 years now. I mean, hashtag fire Fox is giving them a run for their money. Yeah, you know, a la Chicago Bears head coach John Fox, who is being chased out of town. But it seems like people don't understand that just because we refer to them as this convenient nickname of Gar Pax that rolls right off the tongue. No, they're separate people. And per Ryan's question of what would it take for John Paxson, I mean, the only scenario is Jerry Reinsdorf dies and the Reinsdorf family sells the organization to someone else. Because as long as the Reinsdorfs own the Chicago Bulls and Michael Reinsdorf is the president and Jerry is the patriarch, John Paxson has his job, team VP, as long as he wants it. He has a job within the Bulls organization as long as he wants it. So it's not what would it take for Paxson to be fired. It's what would it take for Paxson to say, you know what, I've had enough, I resign and leave. And I don't really see that happening because I think he wants to see this rebuild through.
The funny thing is he didn't even want, if we go back to when Gar was brought on, do we not, you know, Jason Papp brought this point up, is it's a good point too, is like John Paxson didn't even really want the job in the first place. He was promoted and sort of stayed in this position and he got a promotion. So that's sort of why he stayed. I think to your point too, it would probably take to the point where John Paxson quit or said, I'm done with the job, that he gets outed. I mean, we could be looking at like 3, 4, 5 years down the road where these two are still here. And that pisses me off. Honestly, like I still wholeheartedly believe that these two guys don't have the necessary tools around them, nor have they shown anywhere on their resume that they can rebuild a championship.
Hey, you want to talk about tools around them? We can't forget about Doug Collins now, right? Senior advisor to John Paxson. It's funny that people have already forgotten that Doug Collins technically works for the Bulls. And like, you know, it grabbed headlines for a couple of days, and he did a press conference where he tried to sound young and tell people that he was woke, and he came across as like a grandpa being like, yeah, I know about the Twitter these days. Like Doug Collins is already invisible, insignificant. I don't think anybody really believed that he was going to play a big role in the first place, but it's the same Bulls stuff. It's classic Bulls management, and I don't see Paxson going anywhere. Like you said, if either of these guys is to go and go because they're fired, like Gar is much more likely, but even still, I don't see them firing Gar anytime soon. I really don't.
All right, you want me to pinpoint one scenario where I think that this ends up changing is if we get to the end of Fred Hoiberg's contract, everything stays the same, what we've seen from him before, and it stays the same to the length of his contract. What he's got, 2 years left on his deal. I think at that point, if they don't renew Fred Hoiberg's contract, they fire him, don't renew him, whatever, I think Gar goes with him. I think that's if you wanted to pinpoint or put a finger on a time where they break this duo up plus the coach, I think it's when Fred Hoiberg gets out of town, because that's really their miss, because Gar Foreman was Fred Hoiberg's pick. Like, that was his boy. So if Fred Hoiberg goes, I would imagine that would make it more likely that Gar Foreman leaves too.
Or, you know, like, unless there's some crazy scandal that we don't know about right now where it turns out Paxson is secretly like a serial killer or something. And like, literally, if the question is what would it take, yeah, like that would probably get it done. If he's behind bars instead of running the Bulls front office, yeah, then he can't be running the Bulls front office. But I would also say you might be onto something with the whole, like, all right, if Fred leaves, maybe that might be a good opportunity for Gar to leave as well. Wouldn't it be great Fred just goes back and does his Cyclones gig. He coaches the Iowa State men's team. Gar goes with him. Gar heads up the scouting department for Iowa State men's basketball, going around looking at high school basketball games in rural Iowa. That would just be some delicious, delicious Schadenfreude if that's what Gar ended his career doing, scouting high school players in rural Iowa. All right, well, thanks again to all of you who sent us your questions for our Locked On Bulls mailbag. We will be doing that every Wednesday. Be sure to send us those questions whenever. We'll be sure to send reminders on Mondays or Tuesdays to send us your questions. But whenever you feel like you have a question for us, just shoot us an email, lockedonbulls@gmail.com, or tweet at us at lockedonbulls, and we will address them every Wednesday. And now, before we move to our final segment, a little blast from the past, a name Bulls fans remember, Cameron Bairstow. Had some interesting Bulls tidbits. But before we get to that, listen up, fantasy sports fans. Did you know that your chances of winning on Draft are 80% better than on salary cap sites? That's why Draft is my favorite fantasy site. No more getting crushed by those professional fantasy players. And it's not just me. More than 1 million people already have downloaded the Draft app too. Play in a real live NBA draft right now. You can be done in under 5 minutes and get paid out the next day. Drafts are filling every second, so you can join whenever you want. All new players get a free entry into a real money draft when you make your first deposit. You have to use the promo code LOBULLS. That's right, play in a real money draft for free just by using my promo code LOBULLS. But it gets even better. Drafts is so sure you'll love it that they're even offering Locked On Bulls listeners a money-back guarantee of up to $100. Just search Draft in your app store or go to draft.com and come play free right now with promo code LOBULLS.
To get younger, to get more athletic.
So the final thing we want to wrap up here, if you're a Bulls fan, you remember the name Cameron Bairstow. He was sort of the 12th man, sort of the end of the bench type of guy that the Bulls had around, and didn't play a whole lot for the Bulls. And he went to school at University of New Mexico. Well, now he's back over in Australia playing professional ball, but he did reach out to the Player's Voice, which is sort of a spinoff of what the United States does here with the Player Tribune. And he had some eye-opening things to say about not only about Derrick Rose, but his time in the NBA as a whole, and being an international player that comes over here, and some of the hardships that they find, and some of the differences that they find playing here in the United States rather than overseas. The one thing that caught me, and I know the Chicago Tribune caught this as well, but he had a quote about Derrick Rose and the way that fans treated Derrick Rose while he was here. And so the quote reads, "It was really tough to watch how the Bulls fans and media treated Rose." Bairstow said, who has yet to play this season for Brisbane Bolts while he recovers from a torn knee ligament. He was an awesome teammate and probably the most humble person to ever receive the league MVP. You could tell the injuries and the way he was treated had an impact on his love for the game. And that's sort of the theme of what we've heard over the last couple years. You look at what Derrick Rose left after the injuries and him having to battle with it, and he kind of went MIA with the Knicks, and then now his recent decision to trying to like mull over his career as an NBA player and trying to decide what's best for his future. I think he's right in the sense that it has to impact a guy like that. You were at the top of your game so young, and you had all these injuries, and I can imagine from a mental standpoint, it took a toll on him. But it's interesting to hear from a guy, sort of like a guy that was, you know, behind the, like on the team, not really talked about a whole lot, that kind of saw this going on as a whole. I think it makes sense, because there's a lot of other people who've said things like this about Rose and the way he was treated, especially the last couple
of
years when he was in Chicago.
Make the argument that Rose was treated unfairly, and I'm not talking about, you know, we're going to put the whole sexual assault allegation and the civil suit to the side. I'm talking about as he was rehabbing from his torn ACL and then suffering those successive injuries after that, he definitely took a lot of heat and a lot of hate from Chicago sports fans, and I think for the most part more than was justified, more than he deserved. And we've talked on end about how some of that is the fact that he is not great at public speaking, and probably he just put his foot in his mouth one too many times, and fans got sick of it. But to hear that from the perspective of a quiet, unheralded, non-celebrity-level teammate just kind of adds to the evidence we have about Derrick Rose being a very humble kid. a kid who grew up in, you know, the South Side of Chicago, the Englewood neighborhood, and is one of those great stories of a kid who came from nothing, all of a sudden is the star player on his hometown NBA team, and he never was really comfortable with being in that amount of spotlight. I mean, it was incredibly ballsy of him, Jordan, if you remember his media day before the 2010-11 season. Before his, he called it. He was like, why can't I be MVP of the league? Why not? Coming into his third season, he was like, yeah, I'll be MVP. Why not? And that was like the most non-humble thing we heard from him. And everything else is credit to my teammates. You know, I'm just, you know, trying to be a team player, trying to lead my team to victory, et cetera, et cetera. He's like everything he said other than I want a max contract, you know, a year ahead of when he was due to get one. And a few other things about, like, oh, my knees, whatever. He's a humble kid, and I think he's been largely misunderstood by the Chicago fan base. And, you know, it's I hope his story's not over. And it sounds like I saw a tweet earlier today. He did address his Cavs teammates after returning to the team, decided that he's not ready to retire yet. And I hope that he can turn around the legacy that he's tarnished. But his Chicago legacy might be set in stone. You know, whatever he does outside and away from the Bulls might not change how most Bulls fans feel about him at this point.
Question real quick for you as we wrap up. So once Derrick Rose is done playing in the NBA, do the Bulls retire his number?
That's a good question. I would like to see them retire his number.
I think he deserves it.
I think he deserves that. For that MVP season alone. And for the fact that in that MVP season, he led the Bulls to a 20-win improvement from the season prior and the number one seed in the East and took them to the Eastern Conference Finals. You know, I mean, he brought excitement back to a starving Bulls fan base. And I will always fondly remember those seasons of pre-ACL tear Derrick Rose. That's some of the most fun I've ever had as a basketball fan. And I remember the Jordan years. And there was a lot of dog days between the Jordan years and Derrick Rose. I think his number deserves to be in the rafter. When you said Cameron Bairstow, and then you know that article popped up, and you know that was sort of our reasoning for getting into that conversation. The other thing I thought about when I thought about Cameron Bairstow is how well Spencer Dinwiddie is playing this season.
Stop, please stop.
Yeah, a part of that trade, and the Bulls get their hands on Dinwiddie for a hot second, and then let him walk. So that they can keep Michael Carter Williams. They make a roster spot for Michael Carter Williams. They ditch Dinwiddie, and Dinwiddie is having himself a season. Honestly, his stats across the board. Aussie Bulls fan Mark on Twitter, he put Dinwiddie and Dunn's season stats so far as starters side by side, and guess who's are better?
No, I don't even want. I'm not even going to finish that for you. I'm not even going to finish that sentence for you. But that's going to about do it here on Locked On Bulls. Remember, find all of our content at LockedOnBulls.com, paired with our friends over at FanRag Sports. You can find the podcast anywhere you find podcasts. That includes iTunes, Android, Stitcher, and Google Play. Follow us on Twitter at LockedOnBulls, at Bulls_Peck, and at Jordan C. Malley. We're live on Dash Radio, DashRadio.com, and the Dash Radio app tomorrow morning, 10 a.m. Eastern, 9 a.m. Central Time. It's going to be a mix of today and yesterday's episode, so if you didn't get catch everything that we talked about yesterday, it'll be included on Dash Radio. Make sure to download the Dash Radio app. It's 100% completely free. We're on the Nothing But Net channel, 24 hours a day, 7 days a week, 365 days a year. Basketball talk, all the basketball talk you need with no commercials. But for Jordan and Matt, we'll be back tomorrow. We'll be recapping the Indiana Pacers game and a few other notes for you as well. Hope you have a good night. Enjoy the Bulls game tonight, and we'll see you tomorrow.